Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread 2016. We've been watching what the elections are portending, and it's interesting how it comes about. But there's one thing for sure that you learn with it. Let's come to Psalm 62. This is why we're here and they're there. Psalm 62. Okay. Let's pick it up here in verse 8. Psalm 62 and verse 8. Trust in him at all times. And that's what this day pictures. You people, pour out your heart before him, for God is a refuge for us. Surely men of low degree are vanity. Best we are is vanity. And men of high degree are a lie. So that's what you're watching on television when you see all of this going on. Okay? When weighed into balance, they are altogether lighter than vanity. Look at all the schemes. Look at all the things that they are doing. Amazing, isn't it? Quite amazing. Trust not in oppression. Do not take pride in stolen goods. Boy, I wonder if they should read this in Congress. If riches increase, do not set your heart upon them. God has spoken once, twice I've heard this. That power belongs to God. Also to you, O Lord, belongs mercy, for you give to every man according to his work. Very interesting question if you're confronted by a hardcore grace Sunday keeper. When they get done telling you all about it, then ask him, if that's the case, why does God judge us according to our works? See? Okay. So here we are on the last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Let's come back to Leviticus 23. Very interesting if you think about this. Now, we don't know exactly how the copies of the Bible were before Ezra and Nehemiah. Were they all at the temple? See, because there were very few synagogues before the fall of Jerusalem and Judea under Nebuchadnezzar. Okay? So what we're reading in Leviticus 23 was particular knowledge for the priests, and only general knowledge to the people as they taught it. Now, when Ezra set up the synagogue system, he set it up because there was such a movement with the Samaritan Jews, with their temple and their version and so forth that they had. That's why he canonized the Old Testament. And they sent out official copies to every synagogue. So that was the first time that it was out there on a mass basis. But as we read Leviticus 23, we find that everything is connected, especially unleavened bread and Pentecost. So let's start right here in verse 1. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, concerning the appointed feast of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, even these are my appointed feast. And the first one is the Sabbath, which he created to sanctify us. Now, isn't it interesting? Every time we obey God, we receive understanding. Every time we disobey God, we lose knowledge. Every time. So, People want to know where God is. Number one, keep the Sabbath, because the fourth commandment says God created everything that there is. So then he says, 6 days shall work be done. Seventh is the Sabbath of rest, holy convocation. You shall not do any work. It is a Sabbath to the Lord in all your dwellings. All right. That puts us in contact with God. What is the next logical question? What is God doing? Does he have a plan? How do you explain wickedness and trouble and terrible things going on? How is God going to solve that? That's the first question on everyone's minds, isn't it? Yes. Well, God has the answer in the next step to understanding God. Just keep reading. Verse 5. In the 14th day on the first of the first month between the two evenings is the Lord's Passover. The Passover is the day that Jesus Christ was killed. He was the Lamb of God, is the Lamb of God, because his sacrifice goes all the way back and all the way forward to cover all human life. So at the Passover, this tells us how God is going to solve the problem of human sin. Now, since human beings are the pinnacle of his creation of the physical things on the earth, and stop and think about it. And I think the longer you live, the more you understand it. Everything about the earth has been made to support God's creation that he created here. Human life, animal life, plant life, ocean life, air life, all that sort of thing. And all of them all fit together, and human beings call it the ecosystem. And scientists like to think they're very smart, but God is the greatest scientist because he made it all. And the only thing they can do is analyze it and try and figure it out, see? So, then the next question is, once you have a means of forgiving human sin, now what do you do? Unleavened bread. You learn God's way, you put it into your heart and mind. That's the symbolism of the unleavened bread. And then we come to the next holy day, which is today, the last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And this tells us that in life there are going to be many challenges and difficulties, and that God works in our lives, and he will take care of it for us if we trust in him. And he will work out circumstances that we don't even realize will happen. Now, have you had that happen in your life? You know, it says there, the last part of Ephesians, the third chapter, above all that we ask or think. Now, let me ask you a question. Have you had something happen to you in a good way that you really didn't pray about it? You just thought about it. A fleeting thought. Oh, God, that would be nice. And then somewhere down the road, you're going along. Bing, the light goes on. God answered that prayer. Okay? So that's what this day is all about. But it's also connected, as we will see, to Pentecost. But we'll focus on this day. First day, holy convocation. Seventh day, holy convocation. Bring an offering made by fire. So we don't have an altar here, or we don't have one there, but we have all of the things that we have earned, and we have our paper money today. So now think about this. Think about if God blessed you, say you own some cattle. Okay. I remember Burkhart's. He had a dairy dairy ranch. Very, very tough to run a dairy and be in the church because cows have to be milked. But he figured out how to do it once on the Sabbath. Okay. Now then, he asked me, what do you think about modern in vitro fertilization or artificial insemination of cattle? I said, well, I think God created the bull to take care of the matter directly. So I said, why don't you try that and see what happens? So he did. And he got an, and it was a tall one. I mean, it was mammoth. It stood at least this high from the floor, not from where I am. And it had a head that was about this big. And now I know why he kept him corralled in a special barn. Okay. And now I know why they don't let bulls live very long, because they get mean and aggressive, see. But anyway, he used a bull instead of artificial insemination, and in the first year he had, I think it was 4, maybe 6 sets of twins. Twins. Now, is that 100-fold or not? See? And he was blessed. Okay? So, that's what these holy days are about. God in our lives, and our lives in God. Okay? So, we are to give according to the blessings that God has given us. Someone asked me, why don't you send out a letter and ask for money? Put an envelope in it. I said, no. I said, brethren and people need to know that God does expect tithes and offerings. Now, he also expects us to give, but he doesn't want us to be merchandisers. Okay? So that's why. And if we do, we'll find ourselves blessed in whatever way it may be. It may be a blessing that you have good health. It may be a blessing that you keep your job. It may be other blessings physically. But what is the most important blessing of all? The Spirit of God and understanding His Word. And especially in this age. So think about that. Think about the fantastic blessing that ever since there has been the printed Bible, that people have been able to get together to read the Bible. Think about how God's church has been able to grow in grace and knowledge, and also you have to tie in some prophecies. What we understand today, and we understand through loving God, keeping His commandments, but because He says in the end time, the wise shall understand. None of the wicked will understand. You know, if you just told someone, well, I love God and keep His Sabbath and holy days, they give you a strange look. Why do you do that? Hey, well, you could tell them. All right. So, we'll go ahead and take a little pause here, and we will take up an offering. I'm sure you already have an envelope. Okay. So, Jonathan and Ken, if you could take care of it there, that'll work good. We've got to get some special music for these occasions. Is that good?
Oh, yeah.
Send an email to Randy at Church at Home.
I will.
Okay. Okay. Thank you for the offering. Now then, let's continue on and see what happened, because we can learn from historical things that happened on particular days. And it's very interesting. It's a very complicated book, so I don't recommend it for anyone who is not interested in numbers and savvy with numbers, because your head will just spin. And that's the book, The Music of the Appointed Times by Dwight Blevins, and how so many things are done right on schedule, and we don't even know about it. See? Now, the children of Israel, when they left, we know they left at the beginning of the 15th day on what is now the night much to be remembered to the Lord or observed unto the Lord. And God did something deliberate. He said in chapter 13, chapter 13, verse 17. Now it came to pass, when Pharaoh had let the people go, God did not lead them in the way, or by the way, to the land of the Philistines, though it was near. For God said, lest the people repent when they see war. Because he knew it was going to happen. Exodus 13, verse 17. And they returned to Egypt. Now, tie this verse in with Matthew 13 and Mark 4, which is the sowing of the seed. Some fell in the stony place, sprouted up, but died. Some fell in the weeds. Cares and riches of the world choked it out. Okay. Others received it with joy, and Satan came along and took it away. Oh, that's wonderful. I'm glad to hear about it. I'm so happy that the Lord is with you. Can I go to church with you on Sunday? And you say, well, no, we go the day before. Really? Wow, there must be something wrong with you. Okay. So God knew what was going to happen. But God led the people around by the way of the wilderness of the way, that means the highway. They had certain regular roads that they went on. And if you watch any of the Nat Geo shows, especially in Africa, there are a lot of little highways that are through the wilderness and through the grasslands for elephants, for zebras, for wildebeest. They all have the way that they go. And then you have all of the predators, the lions and the cheetahs and the leopards, and they have their little paths that they go on. And then you have the wild dogs. All of those, you see, there was a path to go on. Well, there was the way that came down by the Red Sea. Okay. So then they took the bones of Joseph and so forth. So God told them to go down there, the first part of chapter 14. And when they were camped alongside the Red Sea. Now, how many have watched on television the supposed immigrants from the Middle East going in droves up to Europe? Okay, you saw that. All right. Wide column, all together. And that's as close as you can come to what the Exodus was like. Only add to it animals, carts, etc. And here they're going. They have to go in marching order. And the order was established by God. When they came to the Red Sea, they were marching down alongside the Red Sea, and there was not a lot of room left over toward the mountains on the west, and the Red Sea was on the right. And God didn't take them by the Sea of Reeds, you know, the little puddle that's up there, you know, where most of the atheists say that's where they went. And so they were camped there. So here, this leads in to the last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. This is their last move out of Egypt. So there they were all camped. And the Egyptian said, hey, we let them all go. You know, I got to cook my food. I have to draw my water. I have to, you know, whatever it is. You know, think of it this way. Now, we had our stove go out for just a day or two. What do you do without a stove? Well, you have to go out to a fast food place to buy something. Well, what if there wasn't a fast food place? You know, in Egypt, they didn't have a lot of McDonald's and Wendy's and Kentucky Fried Chickens and Safeways and Nob Hills and all of this sort of thing. No. So they said, we got to get all of these servants and slaves back. So Pharaoh said, that's a good idea. He got his 600 chariots, his army, and they came lickety-split to try and get them. God knew that this was going to happen. He deliberately set it up so he could show the children of Israel his great power. So they all got there, and when they pursued after them, when they drew near, verse 10, chapter 14, when Pharaoh drew near and the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were very afraid, and the children of Israel cried out to the Lord. And they all fell on their knees and prayed to God, and God zapped them with fire from heaven. No. Now, this is the lesson for today. When difficult things come along, don't blame God. So let's see what they did. Now, human nature always blames someone else. So here you go, verse 11. They said to Moses, why have you taken us away to die in this wilderness? Because there were no graves in Egypt. There was plenty of room to bury us there, but there's no... What did you bring us here for? Why have you dealt this way with us to carry us forth out of Egypt? Did we not tell you this word in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians? No. See how human nature changes the story? What were they doing? They were moaning, they were groaning, they were crying out to God, oh, we're under all this slavery and making these bricks and all the works that we're doing. God heard their cry, brought them out, okay? Didn't look to God, they looked to Moses, okay? Let us alone to, verse 12. Did we not tell you this word in Egypt, saying, let us alone that we may serve the Egyptians, for it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than we should die in the wilderness? And Moses said to the people, fear not, don't be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation which the Lord will work for you today. See, many times God lets us get into situations and causes us to come to situations to see whether we will rely on Him or not. See? And it also shows there are going to be situations and difficulties that are far beyond our ability to overcome. And the thing that God is doing is far beyond the immediate problem we are examining. Okay? And we can look back and see, even in the church, all the things that we went through while the church was going astray, and all the difficulties. And God wanted to know. He wanted to know. He was testing the whole church. Do you love me? Will you keep my commandments always? What if there are difficulties and you can't control them? Now what are you going to do? Get along and go along? Are you going to stand for the truth? Are you going to keep my word? Are you going to trust in me? All of those things come up. Okay? So stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which He will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, you shall never see them again. The Lord shall fight for you, and you shall be still. That's what we need to do when we come up with a problem that is so great and so difficult. We go to God and say, God, fight for me. God, open the way. Show me how things need to be. What do I need to do? Okay? What can you do for me? And lots of times, the answer will come when God is ready. So God was ready for this. He knew this was going to happen. And the Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? So even Moses got caught up in this, okay? Speak to the children of Israel that they go forward. Now, how are you going to do that if you've got the Egyptians on one side of you and you've got the Red Sea on the other side of you, and God probably took him where it was a pretty deep place, because God is the only one who can do the impossible. And you lift up your rod, stretch out your hand over the sea and divide it. Okay? I wonder what he thought. This stick? That water? Lift it up? Okay, God, you're in charge. I got it up. Okay. And the children of Israel shall go on dry ground through the midst of the sea. Now you think about what a great miracle this was. Dry ground. And behold, I'm about to harden the hearts of the Egyptians, and they shall follow them. And I will get honor for myself upon Pharaoh and over all his army, over his chariots and over his horsemen. And the Egyptians shall know that I am the Lord, when I will be glorified through Pharaoh, his chariots, and his horsemen. Now think of this. Think of what they left when they came to get after the children of Israel. What was the condition of Egypt? All their firstborn, they just buried. Think of all the plagues and all the difficulties that came on it. And it was in a shambles. No wonder they wanted to get the children of Israel back. They were living in a disaster area. Now, you want to see something comparable for that today? Look at the Middle East. Okay? So, then the angel of the Lord, verse 19, who went before the camp of Israel moved, and he went to the rear of them, because they were in this long column, one on the other side. And the pillar of cloud that went in front of them, and it stood between them. So God put up a wall. It was light to the children of Israel and darkness to the Egyptians. Very fitting. You know, Egypt is a type of sin and darkness, and Satan the devil. Can you imagine what Satan was thinking here? Can you imagine the delusion that he was in? Amazing. So it gave light, didn't come near each other all night. So that's how the last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread started. So Moses did that, stretched out his rod, verse 21, and the Lord drove back the sea with a strong east wind all the night, and he made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided. Now this was a wide swath. Now, have you ever watched soldiers marching in a column, okay? Then the command comes out to the right flank, ho! And the whole column, instead of going this way, turns, and the whole column at once goes to the right. And that's what God did here. He made a wide swath, because there were a lot of people to get across, and can you imagine how many hours it would have taken for them to get across if it were like in the movie The Ten Commandments? You know, over 1 million people. So, a wide swath. And the waters were to them. The children of Israel, verse 22, went into the midst of the sea upon the dry ground, and the waters were a wall to them on their right hand and on their left. Now, I don't think that all of them were close to the water. There were some that all they could do was see that the water was standing up. Now, how's God going to make the water stand up? See? Can you imagine what it was like for them going through? Because it was right just about sunrise. They all moved across to the other side. But it was still dark to the Egyptians. So they got across the other side, probably didn't take them much more than about an hour for them to do the right flank and go across and get up on the other side. So then, and the Egyptians pursued, verse 23, went in after them in the middle of the sea, and all the Pharaoh's horses, his chariots and horsemen, and in the morning watch, it came to pass that the Lord looked down upon the army of the Egyptians through the pillar of cloud of fire in the cloud, and the army of the Egyptians was thrown into confusion. That's the best way to do your enemy, isn't it? Mess them all up. they were thrown into confusion. And he loosened their chariot wheels. He took all the chariot wheels off. Now, a little sidebar. There's a man named Ron Wyatt. Okay? And he has pictures of chariots in the Gulf of Aqaba that are under the water. And he says that's where the Egyptians chased the children of Israel. But when you look at the chariots, guess what? The wheels are still on them. So that was another event, not this one, see? And can you imagine? All that water, God took all the wheels off. And then he caused the water to come back. And imagine the power of the water. Don't you think that all those chariots were just ripped to shreds? Oh, another sidebar over here on this side. There's a false story out that they supposedly found the skeletons of men and, you know, in the mud in the Red Sea. False. Don't believe it. All right. So, they said, let us flee from the face of Israel, for the Lord fights for them against the Egyptians. And the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the sea so that the waters may come back upon the Egyptians, upon their chariots and upon their horsemen. And they all died. So everyone was happy. Everyone was just excited and elated and thanking God, praising God. You know, Miriam and the women were dancing with their timbrels, and I imagine there were others out there blowing the ram's horn and blowing the trumpets and dancing and cheering, you know. And it was quite a thing. Oh, first part of chapter 15 brings that out. That was really something. And they even had a special song. The Lord is triumph. The Lord is great. The Lord is mighty. Okay. Then they moved inwards a little bit. And they came to a place called Marah. That took them 3 days to get there. And they were running out of water. Now, if you don't think water is important in a wilderness area, when all you have is what's on your back, probably eaten up all the unleavened bread by that time, where are you going to get water? And you come to this place, God led you to this place, and you find out the water's bitter. Can't drink it. Okay, so they murmured against Moses, verse 24. Saying, what shall we drink? Now, you've got animals, you got cows, you have horses, you know, you have all of that going on. You have children, mommy, can I have a drink of water? You know, you have some people who are really thirsty and all of that sort of thing. Where are we going to get water? And the message comes back, it's bitter, we can't drink it. What are we going to do? Again, did they all get on their knees and pray to God? No. See? So they said, they cried to the Lord, verse 25, and the Lord Moses did. And God showed him a tree, verse 25, and when he had cast it into the waters were made sweet. Now the little sidebar here. There are certain things that God has created for our benefit, which we can use, and this was in a medicinal way. Okay? So they had plenty of water. Now then, notice what God said. He did this to prove them, because he was going to give them another promise. Rather than complaining, rather than looking to Moses, rather than accusing other people, rather than saying, well, what are we going to do in this wilderness? See, God said, verse 26, he said to them, he's going to make a decree and law for them to prove them. Verse 26 now. If you will diligently hearken to the voice of the Lord your God. Okay? Now, hearken means to hear and obey. See? The three words throughout the Bible. Simplest way to explain the Bible. Obey my voice. Here it is, right here. Okay. And There are other conditions. Will do that which is right in my sight, and will give ear to my commandments, and will keep all my laws. I will put none of these diseases upon you, which I brought upon the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you. Now look at all the sickness and disease we have today. Just read Deuteronomy 28. There are more than, you know. And health care is not the solution. Repentance is the solution. See, that's what needs to be. Now, if through this election people think that they're going to have better times, they might for a while, but only for one purpose. What do you suppose that purpose would be? For God's churches to have another space of time to preach the Word of God and to teach the brethren. That's the only reason why. Okay. Because how many are repenting? You know, I don't hear Donald or his advisors or any of the others running for office saying, listen, now there are a few who say that our sins are bringing this upon us, but they don't understand what the sins really are. It's not necessarily the last six. That's important, but more important are the first four. And can you imagine trying to get a law passed in Congress that now the seventh-day Sabbath is mandatory for everybody, including Muslims and Buddhists and Hindus and Protestants and Catholics? And the first order of business is, as an amendment to this bill, which should pass Congress unanimous on their knees praying to God, which will never happen, the first order of business after that is to destroy every idol. You think any of that would happen? No. Now you know why God has to come. Oh, Dolores and I were watching the news the other day, and they were again talking about aliens. Okay? And Dolores said, you know, Satan is preparing the whole world for the return of Christ. See, because Christ is coming from where? From the third heaven, right? Outer space? Yes. Okay. Is he going to make war? Yes. He going to make war? Is he an alien? Yes, to this world. Are his angels aliens? Yes, to this world. Are we aliens? Yes, to this world. And then, as we will see on Pentecost, the secret army that God has been preparing from creation will suddenly come to life. It's called the resurrection. Okay? So you'll have to come back to Pentecost for the rest of the story. All right. So there you have it. God will deliver us from our troubles and from our problems. Now, let's come to Psalm 78. Psalm 78. Quite a psalm, and we'll see how the children of Israel always act. They talk about God. Now, I got an email from someone here saying, well, you know, you're pretty hard on those Sunday keepers. You know, they don't know any different. They sincerely believe that Sunday is the Sabbath. That's the whole point. Yes, human beings like to come along and take a little bit of God, acknowledge a little bit of God, and add these things to what they want. So, let's pick it up here in verse 14. All right. It talks about after he divided the sea. Okay. And in the daytime he led them with a cloud, verse 14, Psalm 78, and all night with the light of fire, he split the rocks in the wilderness and gave them drink. I wonder what they thought. You know, it takes a lot of water for these people and for the animals. Think how much water the animals need every day. Okay? God split the rock. First time, God told Moses to strike the rock. Okay? Out came the water. Rivers of water. Okay? Now notice where they came from the great depth. Now they have discovered, another little sidebar over here, there's an area under the crust of the earth that has a form of water that is more than in all the oceans. Huh? See? So God can do miraculous things. You would think that by the time that they got to Mount Sinai, heard the voice of God, that they would have been willing to do anything God wanted regardless, huh? Okay. Didn't happen. Verse 17. Yet they continued to sin still more against him by rebelling against the Most High in the wilderness. God right there with them. You talk about human nature. That's something. Okay. Yea, they spoke against God. They said, can God set a table in the wilderness? Okay. He's given us water. Can he give us bread? Can he provide flesh? Well, God would be doing all of that. See, that's why. If they would have learned the lesson and turned to God and humbly asked God for it, he would have done it. He would have done it. And you know, God's original plan was to bring them into the promised land by the Feast of Tabernacles of the second year. That was God's plan. They didn't have to wander out there 40 years in the wilderness. See, now there's another lesson for us, see. Sometimes we have to go through some difficult times because we really didn't learn the lesson the first time. Or the second time, or the third time, see? All right? Let's come down here to verse 30. He sent the flesh and so forth. He sent manna form. You know, God had all of this ready to go. Manna from heaven. And you would think after 40 years of getting manna for 6 days, and every Sabbath there was a miracle, the manna kept over from the sixth day to the seventh day, you know. But they got tired of raw manna and boiled manna and deep fried manna and, you know, all of that. So they asked for flesh. So God sent them flesh. But in their lust, that's what he did. He sent it. And verse 29. They ate and were filled to the full, for he gave them which they craved. They were not turned away from their lust, but while the food was still in their mouths. Okay? The wrath of God came upon them and killed the strongest of them and struck down the chosen men of Israel. For all this they sinned and did not believe in his wonderful works. Therefore, he ended their days in vanity and their years in terror. And when he slew them, this is what's happening right now. When he slew them, they returned back and sought after God earnestly, just like with 9/11. And they remembered that God was their rock, and the Most High God was their Redeemer. Nevertheless, they flattered him with their mouths, and they lied to him with their tongues, for their heart was not steadfast with him, neither were they faithful in his covenant. But he, being full of compassion, forgave their iniquity and did not destroy them. Yea, many times he turned away his anger and did not stir up his wrath. That's quite a thing. We see that happening right now with this nation. Now, Britain is about 5 years ahead of us. So we don't know what's going to happen there. We'll go ahead and take a break here. But there's this vote coming up, so keep your eyes on it. It's called Brexit or Brexit. Okay? if they exit the European Union. Now, if they do, that'll isolate Ephraim by itself, and that'll set up Europe to go after a strong man, and the background for that is already happening because the extreme right-wing party in Austria got voted into office on the grounds of expelling all the aliens. Not from outer space, but from Syria. Okay, let's take a break.